when I arrived, and I had the Martha's Vineyard experience for the first time, all thanks to John and Joanna that hosted me. It was quite a wonderful experience. And throughout the conversations with Julie and Charlotte, I learned so much about this unique congregation. And this morning, I am happy that we'll be sharing this moment together. I have already learned so much being in America from last year, July, till now, the different people I have met, the different spaces I have shared, religious spaces I have shared. And today, it's quite a memorable and a wonderful experience to be a part of this. And I'm hoping, prayerfully, that we will all leave today rejoicing that we shared in this experience. I'll be doing a reading, and afterwards, I'll be sharing my story and my journey. You will pardon me if I struggle to pronounce words very clearly, but like we were told when we were learning in reading big books, that sometimes you don't have to insist on getting the meaning of every word, but just get the idea of what is being said. And in the end, you will do well with the reading. So if some of my words are not very clear, try to get the big picture of what I'm trying to say, and we will all arrive in the end, we will arrive safely. So I'm reading a text from one of Paul's letters. It's 1 Corinthians, and it's the first chapter. I'll read from 26 to 31. It says, "Take a good look, friends, at who you were when you got called." Take that again. "Take a good look, friends, at who you were when you got called into this life. I don't see many of you the brightest and the best among you. Not many influential, not many from high society families. Isn't it obvious that God deliberately chose men and women that the culture overlooks and exploits and abuses? Isn't it obvious that God chose these nobodies to expose the hollow pretensions of the somebodies? Isn't it obvious that He makes it quite clear that none of you can get by with blowing your own horns before God? Everything that we have, right thinking, right living, a clean slate and a fresh start, comes from God by way of Jesus Christ. That's why we have the saying, if you are going to blow a horn, blow a trumpet for God." Dear Lord, bless your word. Amen. I love the reading Charlotte made a while ago about our stories. And I love the way she put it. Sometimes we are the center seat, the driving seat of our story. Sometimes we are passengers. She gave me another perspective to looking at what I want to share this morning. But each of our lives is a story. And for each person we meet, we become a part of their story, and they become a part of ours. Today, I am officially a part of this wonderful community. I'm a part of your story. And you will become a part of my story. Wherever I go, I will always remember that I was in this space with you, sharing fellowship with you, sharing this wonderful moment with you, sharing a spiritual experience with you. So we become a part of each person's story that, as we meet. The individual stories of our lives are interconnected and they are interwoven. I love a quote by Eugene Peterson. He says, stories don't just tell us something and leave us there. And that's what I'm trusting God to help me to do this morning, not just to share my story and to leave it there. Stories invite our participation. Honest stories respect our freedom. Honest stories don't manipulate us. Honest stories don't force us. And honest stories don't distract us from life. What do? They bring us into an experience. It could be a spiritual experience, it could be a cultural experience, but we are invited to become participants of any story that we're either a part of or a story that we hear. Today, what I'm sharing, I title it My Story, My Ministry, and My Journey to Harvard Divinity School. And I'm hoping to make a few points and afterwards tie it up and look forward to more conversations. But I believe that the idea of my story can help anyone who listens to acknowledge the presence or the absence of the divine in their lives. I also believe that when I share what I'm sharing, people could begin to imagine how their stories could help them to connect with other humans, to connect with other people, especially if we own our stories, if we're able to have positive perspective to our stories. And I also believe that our stories can become a tool that will help us to foster revolutionary change in our communities or in our places of endeavor. In today's episode of what I'm sharing, I shall limit it to the street ministry I have been involved in over the years and how that has contributed to my journey to Harvard Divinity School. When I arrived at Harvard Divinity School, I met with one of the professors and he said, what is your story? I want to hear your story. And what I'm sharing right now is a defining moment that I can't share my story without sharing that. Sadly, when I brought that dimension of my story, he said, you can't say that at Harvard. He is a reputable, respected professor, so I didn't have to speak back. Culturally, in Africa, we don't speak back when elders talk. Even if you don't agree with what an elder says, you listen and you are quiet. But in your mind, you know that the elder is not right. And if you have an opportunity to say it in a way that doesn't show that you are being arrogant to an elder, then you voice your hesitations or your reservations or your disapproval of whatever you feel is wrong. So when I listen to the professor, I say, you can't say that at Harvard. In my mind, I say, but it's my story. And I'm happy that I'll be sharing part of that here today. So 19 years ago, I was in a place in Lagos, one of the biggest cities in Nigeria, K2. But how did I get to Lagos? I was 19 years old, and I was staying with my elder brother in Kaduna. Kaduna is also one of the biggest cities in Nigeria. And I wrote a note. It was precise and short enough for me to always remember what I wrote. I'll have to ask him one of these days if he still has my letter. But what was the content of the letter? I have left for good. Nobody should look for me. I believe that someday I will be back, and together we shall live in harmony as a family. And off I left to Lagos to search for my destiny. I was determined to work very hard, and I was determined to become rich and wealthy and influential, so that when there are family meetings and I speak, what I said will be heard and respected. And I left. I think I found what I was looking for. Or what I was looking for found me. But it wasn't the riches that I had gone to search for. I had a turnaround after staying in Lagos for 1 year. I had what many people from the Christian faith refers to as spiritual regeneration. It was an experience that I didn't envision coming my way. I had always thought that if there was going to be a turnaround in my life, then I will have to have a very supernatural experience where maybe I will see a sign from heaven or something very spectacular will happen to me, but it didn't happen that way. To cut the long story short, when I returned back to Boko, where I was brought up, nobody believed that I was a new person or a changed person or a different person. Not my dad, and not my mom, or not my friends. I had professed that I was a changed person over and over, that people were tired of hearing that I was a changed person. They didn't know which one was real. But quietly within my mind, I knew that this was a new Solomon. I was convinced about it. I would tie this up by an experience I had sometime in 2014, after I had received some training to become a priest, and went back to the same town I was giving birth to and dedicated in a local church to have a wedding. So while we're running around the little town to have this wonderful wedding ceremony, I went to a pharmacy to get some medications, and I stumbled over a friend, an old-time friend. And he looked at me and he said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yes, I'm okay." And I was smiling and I was wondering why he was asking me if I was okay. He engaged me and again he asked, "Are you all right?" And I said, "Yes, I'm fine." Then it occurred to me that this man was seeing a new person in me. And I said, "Oh, I eventually give my life to Jesus Christ. I went to the seminary. I'm now a pastor. I'm serving in Makodi. In fact, I just came here to have my wedding." And when I was saying that, he looked at me. Then he started asking me very personal questions about my own family, because he knew that I had lived a life that sometimes I couldn't even have details about my own family. He said, "What does your mom do now? What about your sister?" This was an outsider asking me about my own family. And when I told him everything, he said, "I still don't believe anything you've told me." We haven't met since 2014. But I'm hoping that one of these days, if I travel to Nigeria, I'll look for him and say, "Do you now believe after 2 decades of being on this path?" Why did I take time to share this story with us? Our stories can provide for us lenses where we can either see the presence or the absence of the divine in our lives. For me, it was hard for me to see that I could be on a path where I would refer to myself as a spiritual care provider. It was difficult for me to see that. It was difficult for friends to see that. It was difficult for my parents to see that. In fact, I remember my dad asked that, "Don't you think what you are professing right now is as a result of maybe the hard substances that you might have taken?" I said, "No." One of those days, I would lock myself in a room trying to get to understand more about the path I'm on. My mom came to me and asked me, "Which God is it that you said have saved you?" And I said, "It's the creator of heaven and earth." Again, I'm saying our stories can provide for us lenses that we can see the presence or the absence of the divine in our lives. Dearly beloved, I want you to know that there is a divine thread that runs through the tapestry of our lives. Even if at some point it may not look like it, even if at some point it may not make sense, even if family, friends, and loved ones may not believe that there is a divine interest or a divine dimension to our lives, even if we may often doubt ourselves and doubt our stories, the truth is God is in the details of our lives. Whatever those details read, He is in those details. Those details sometimes could read addiction. Those details sometimes could read broken homes or broken marriages. Those details of our lives sometimes could read poverty. Whether those details are messy or those details are well organized, I want you to know that God is always in the details of our lives. He is in the detail of your life. It doesn't matter what other people say, what the society says, God is in the details of your life. When you look at your life, what do you see? Do you see God's presence or do you see His absence? And how has that affected the way you see the rest of humanity? When we put our stories in a proper perspective, they help us to better appreciate others. Daily, I'm learning how to put my story in perspective. When I was on the street and I was trapped with social vices, when I was a rebellious kid, not many people saw me as an image bearer of the divine, and it bothered me. When I was desperately in need of love and acceptance, as one who was not formally affiliated with a religious group, the love and acceptance I desperately longed for was hardly shown to me, and it bothered me. And because it bothered me, those unpleasant experiences has provided me with lenses to see the people I meet differently. Those unpleasant experiences remind me of the urgent need to treat people lovingly, to believe that there is a hope and a future for the people we meet, whether we are like them or not. And I have endless stories, but I shall share just a few to how the unpleasant experiences of my life helped me to get involved in the society. The first one is the ghetto and the Bolt or Uber experience I had. Because I was involved in the community in the very negative way, when I got on this path, I saw myself as a lifetime member of those communities. I didn't see myself as now a clergy who no longer takes marijuana, but I saw myself as a member of that community, even if, like, I went to a church in Dorchester, and I learned that Americans have another word for it. They call it being sober. Yeah, somebody gave a testimony. He said, I thank God for my wife. She has been sober for the last 19 years. You know, and I said, oh, really, sober? Good caption. But that I am no longer trapped in whatever it is that make people sober over time doesn't mean I can't have a way of identifying with those people. So I go there. And I'm very excited that I still have contacts of my friends who are struggling. They remind me of me. And they help me to remain on this path. When I meet with them, they say, we can see it in your eyes. And they are taking whatever they are taking. They say, we can see it in your eyes. Don't worry, very soon we'll be like you. It gives me hope. I see them as humans. There is a mutual respect and understanding as we relate with each other. But apart from that, I was posted to a very small congregation in Nigeria that raising offering for basic things was difficult. And how could I teach people how to give for the work of God? And I felt I needed not to depend only on the offerings that were raised for the payment of my salary, but also to see how I can work very hard. And I had a Toyota Corolla 2007. And one day I parked the car and I was looking at it, and they say people use their cars for taxi. Why not carry yours and use it for taxi? And I went to the union, made inquiries how to get my car involved, and I learned I could do Uber. In Nigeria, they call it Bolt. And I registered for it. And it was quite a wonderful experience. whether I was carrying people to the hotels, whether young or old, or carrying people to nightclubs and parties, we would have interactions. And some of the things that touched me very much was sometimes I'll be well dressed for my Uber business and I'm giving somebody a ride and I'm dropping them at a park for them to travel. And as I lift their bags from the boot, is it boot you call it? Yeah, truck. Thank you. Americans call it differently. From the truck, they look at me and they say, "You're different. Is this the only thing you do?" And sometimes they probe further to know if I have something else I do apart from tags. And I tell them, yes, I'm a spiritual care provider. My story has helped me to see the people I relate with differently. But it has also helped me to journey to Harvard. Just the same way I'm here today. Wonderful people, a unique congregation. The same thing with Harvard. When I got accepted to come to Harvard, most of my professors said, "You're going to Harvard? You can go to Harvard for anything. You were trained in an evangelical theological seminary. You went to a Baptist theological seminary. You can go to Harvard." But the point is, if only my professors would know my story, Harvard is the place I need to be. So I meet people who are different from me and who remind me that we need each other. We are interdependent on one another. So my story is part of what has led me to Harvard Divinity School, to understand what does it mean to be a pastor? What does it mean to be a spiritual care provider? What does it mean to understand church beyond the four walls of a building? I'm trying to say, when we put our stories into proper perspective, they help us to appreciate one another. And it is part of the reason why when I saw the advert, I said, there's a good place to go. And I'm telling you, I'm not kidding, I'm not flattering. These experiences are helpful. Being hosted by John and Joanna, hearing of the many, many years that they invested in working in Africa, helping people, solving problems. I was touched by that. I was touched by that. They took me out, gave me a Mexican restaurant experience. I was touched by those kind, wonderful, loving gestures. If I didn't come, how would I know that there are loving and amazing people in UU Fellowship? How would I know? I wouldn't know. And I'll be tying it up. How can our stories help us to drive revolutionary change in our communities? I just want to beg with you as a roundup, own your story. There were times I shared some ugly parts of my story, and some prominent members of some of the churches I served, like if it was an elite church, they say, "Pastor, you can't say that. You can't say that." I said, "But it's my story." And what were some of those things? Like, once upon a time, I was a little child whose shirts had holes at the back. It's my story. They say, "You can't say that, but it's my story." Or I say, "I stole in the neighborhood." They say, "No, you can't say you stole, but it's my story." And there were parents sometimes that were encouraged by hearing those negative side of, it doesn't have to be a negative side of your story. I mean, not everybody has a negative story to tell. But whatever it is, own your story. It may motivate and encourage someone. How can our stories be used to spark a revolutionary change? It doesn't have to be dramatic. It might be in form of a smile that you extend to someone, kind gestures that you extend to someone. A compliment that you might give to someone. Stepping into a new space where others think you would never be, you'll never step because of your belief. In conclusion, I want to state again that God is at work in your life. Don't allow your story to keep you from seeing Him at work. We are interdependent upon one another. We all have a past, and it must not be an ugly past. It could be a past of a little beginning, just like we read a while ago in the text, the sacred text I read. Whatever it might be, our past should provide a perspective for us to see others in a dignified way. See them as humans. See them as having hope. See them as having a potential for change, a potential for change. If you engage your story long enough, you will realize that there are people in your community or in your place of work that remind you of your yesteryears. That is, it could become the reason behind the friendship relationship you will cultivate, the partnerships you will build. That's part of what I'm doing now. All of these are connected to my own understanding of how our stories can become a motivating factor for us to reach out to members of our community where we live and work. The last thing I want to say is that all? When I was living in Nigeria, I preached my last sermon in July 16th, I suppose, but July, what is 16th or so? Yes, 16th. And I told the people, in case we don't see again, in case we don't meet again, because part of my values is that I don't know when my last day on earth will be. So I wish when I meet people, if I have something I give to them, in case we don't meet again. What else is there to say about sharing our stories and knowing the potential, the power that our stories can cause a revolutionary change? For one who had my kind of experience that I referred to earlier on as a turnaround or a spiritual regeneration, what is the extra for us is to believe that there is hope beyond the grave, to believe that one can live when they die if their belief is in the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's the hope I have, that the good work I'm doing now because of my story, it's something that I want to carry it on when life on earth is no more for me. So we have that hope. You might choose what should be the extra for you. For some, they just want to do the good. They don't want to think about what happens afterwards. But for me, because I couldn't answer those kind of questions, and I doubted those questions, now it has become my reality, and I want it to be the extra to my story. I don't want to just do good because of my unpleasant experiences and have it end here. I believe in the hereafter. My prayer is that we will continue to tap from the experiences of one another, learn to become better people and better serve our communities. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.